Welcome, Greg.
Hey, Martin, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to be back with our listeners and enjoy this post-game with Van Rienen. Right up front, we'd like to share an invitation to those of you who are interested in promoting your book, your school, your church planting, whatever it happens to be. You know, we would love to promote those here at Missiology Podcast.
Yeah, you can just email us at podcast@missiology.com, and we can send you details on pricing and all of the specs and so on and so forth. If you'd like to run a podcast ad, you can do it.
Tell us about Patreon.
Yeah, you got to go to Patreon and support us. We need your help. The more support we get, the easier for us it is to keep produce more, get that content out to you. So you can see the link to our Patreon page at missiology.com. Click on the podcast link, and any given podcast that you select will have a Become a Patron button over on the right side of the page. And just hop over there and send us some love. We need your support.
Thank you for supporting us by listening to this podcast right now, listening to our post game.
Absolutely. Here we are, ready to engage in conversation about Galen Van Rienen.
Galen, you've referred to him as the doyen of COC missiology. Tell us a little bit about that, Greg.
Yeah, I so rarely get to use the word doyen that I enjoy the opportunity, but I think it applies, you know, a preeminent figure in the field of missiology among churches of Christ. Galen, the original owner and content creator for missiology.com, missiology.org, that was the primary URL back in the day. But we inherited this website from Galen, who used it to essentially as a blog to work out his ideas in conversation with his readers. And a lot of the stuff that you can find there in the archive on the missiology.com website, the stuff that he published was hammered into a final form and represented in his missions textbook mentioned in the podcast. And so Galen has been really influential, I would say, particularly for mainstreaming missiology among Churches of Christ educational institutions, getting us connected to the highest level of those conversations, doing real scholarship, making contributions, engaging in the dialogue with other thought leaders, and kind of carrying his students and his mentorees and his colleagues into that world in a way that I don't think anybody else could claim to have done in the last 40 years. And so,
and Greg, I mean, in many ways, you trace your own lineage, your own kind of academic lineage to Van Rienen. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I wasn't a student of Galen, but I was a student of Monty Cox, who was mentored by Galen in the context of African missions, Kenyan missions, and like Galen, ended up going to Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. And so there's just sort of a lineage, as you say, of missiological formation there. You know, I was errant and went off to Fuller, but in any case, I feel the influence, even though I didn't know Galen until later years. Met him for the first time in graduate school when he was visiting the campus at Harding Graduate School of Theology in Memphis, and then later got into contact and friendship with Galen, and ended up ultimately sort of taking over the website on his behalf.
And in speaking of appreciation, I mean, we can pause and just say thank you, Galen, for this this website, for this opportunity to this platform that you've given us to do. I mean, we're doing our best to promote voices, you know, doing our best to create a space where people can talk to one another, where people can hear ideas, where practitioners get to hear great scholarship and scholars get to interact with practitioners and some of the questions that are being asked on the field, on the ground, in local places. So, I mean, thank you, Galen.
Absolutely. Couldn't happen without him, not just because he gave us the website instead of selling it. And there were offers of significant value to own the website Missiala, the URL.
Yeah, I heard ASM really wanted it. Like,
yeah, that they would like. I think before they made the switch over to Sage, they were interested in housing Missiology, the journal, at missiology.com.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, it makes great sense. But Galen said no. Well, we want to hang on to it for other purposes, and so we're thankful to be able to shape those purposes in some sense. And but also, I mean, he's been a financial supporter of the endeavor. Mm-hmm. He probably didn't want me to say that, but it's true. And he and his wife,
thank you,
have been
that
generous and have been kind, loving supporters of the work, and just a great man.
And there are some things that, I mean, there are some ideas about mission and missiology that, by the time you and I were headed off to the mission field, you to Peru and me to China, these were just part of the air that we breathe. Now, it was part of the conversation within the restoration movement, the Churches of Christ. And some of these ideas can be very much traced to, and it's thanks to Van Reeden that we have access to, and that we had access to them at the time. So we're talking about like 2003, 2004 in the early 2000s. But Greg, tell us a little bit about some of those key ideas that, you know, Van Reeden did a great job of, you know, introducing to this portion, this small portion of the evangelical world, the Churches of Christ.
Yeah. And I think it's necessary to say he's hardly alone in influencing missiological education at Churches of Christ, nor was that his goal. Of course, he wanted to mentor others and ultimately did. And so other professors have also been influential. But I think you're right to say that by the turn of the century, there were some things that were working assumptions, in large part because Galen had led the way as an academic, as a scholar, engaging in these conversations. One of those that's clearest is his work on syncretism and contextualization. You have to imagine a generation before missionaries would enter into cross-cultural situations without any awareness of those kinds of dynamics.
Right.
Maybe a nascent commitment to language learning and culture learning and doing the kinds of things that he mentioned, George Gurganus mentoring him to do in the 70s and 80s, but not the degree of maybe critical awareness. And that word critical is, you know, a giveaway, right? We're talking about the Paul Hebert tradition of critical contextualization.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's not light lifting. That's some significant conceptual work.
Yeah.
And to make that sort of a given and a basic assumption for missiological education in Churches of Christ,
yes,
as it was a given in other traditions, is a big deal, I think. And
yeah,
and it was a real contribution.
You talk about the phased, you know, he talks about this phased church planting process, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that as well being an important contribution that he made to our conversations, right? In many ways, just introducing us to these within our little world of the Churches of Christ. But, you know, we needed Hebert's ideas. We needed Hesselgrave, right? We needed to be thinking along those lines and those terms. And again, you know, he helped with that. I mean, what about your own thinking about your job as a missionary? How did that influence you, Greg?
Yeah, I think the big transition there is from the cliche that the missionary is meant to work herself out of a job to a sense that when we talk about mission strategy, if we're not talking about, you know, techniques for church growth or whatever, then what we're talking about is something like this intentionally phased process of knowing how we're going to get to the point where we no longer have a job,
mm-hmm,
and making that an intentional process. And so strategically, how do you go from phase one to phase four? And for that to be again, a working assumption, that it's not just an aspiration, but it's something that you plan for and you think about how it is that you might get there. And well, it's going to require mentoring others really quickly along the way. What he calls Titus's and Timothy's, right? And structuring your process so that you know what the result, at least that you're aiming for, would be. That level of sort of thoughtful, strategic initiative, that's another, again, you can't say, well, Galen did that in Churches of Christ and no one else did, but I think he was waving that banner at the head of the advanced guard.
We needed someone to come along and say things like, we needed folks to share a message about, especially for people that are being trained for the mission field, right? Let's think in terms of initial church stage. What do we do? How do we listen, right? How are we preaching the gospel in a way that's simple, that's engaging the Bible storyline? And then how do we move to the next stage, right? How are we transitioning to a developing church stage, is what he refers to it. A discipling community on mission with God, into this independent church stage, and then later what he refers to as a mature church stage, and where the missionary is going back as an encourager, right? She's going back and she's spending time as a mentor with people, and providing spaces for people to ask those questions and engage each other. But again, that's huge, and I think it relates to one of the other really important themes, concepts that came up in the interview, and it's this idea of graduate education, a graduate education that specifically is relational, mentorship being a really important part of that. Greg, I mean, this is something that this is a question that's been on your mind recently, and even in your scholarship as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I do appreciate about Galen that he holds together a high regard for graduate education, meaning academic, rigorous, scholarly formation, and a vision. I mean, when you listen to the stories he tells, it's clear that for him, even in a PhD program, it was really about being in relationship with his teachers and being formed and then being impressed by how Hesselgrave walked with students and feeling like that was the right model for him as well as a teacher. And so you get this rich idea of a highly advanced form of education that is no less about mentoring relationships. And that the heart of the thing is what he says is imitation rather than just information. And
that's right.
That's a beautiful, if extremely challenging, vision of higher education. But I think it's the right one, especially for theology and missiology in particular. All ministry, all practical theology in particular. It seems to me to be the way to go.
Yeah. And I mean, part of the challenge that you've encountered as you're doing your best to help kind of rethink curriculum in your institution is, this is not easy, partly because we don't have, it's not part of our job description, right? We're not trained necessarily to do this work as professors, nor do we have in some ways the bandwidth to do this because of the economic constraints. I mean, we're working with, tell us a little bit about that. You're encountering these things right now as at your institution, the kind of conversations that you're having.
So if you conceive of a program of training that places a high priority on practical experiences and then reflection on those experiences, the pivot point for that process, the linchpin, is a faculty mentor helping a student work through those experiences by engaging with the critical material that they're reading and studying. And that kind of mentorship just isn't part of the classical model of theological education. It's much more about that information transfer. And so when you look at, but then when you look at a faculty member who's already teaching a 4-4 load, which is, as anybody who's done that knows, more than a full-time job already, hours-wise. I mean, if a full-time job is...
It does feel like a lot. I'm doing grading right now, and I feel like that's... like, I'm at the end of my semester, and I'm like, I'm swamped in grading. You know, I mean, it's... I just love grading. It's why I signed up for this whole job, right? It's just my... The best part of everything I do is... but anyway, your point, though, is that this takes time, and it means you have less time and energy for engaging students relationally.
That's right.
Right. Walking That's with right. students and actually, you know, developing that you've got 4 years, right? I mean, if we're thinking about a traditional undergraduate program like I'm in, to connect with students, do your best to, you know, create those intimate, trusting relationships and, you know, spend intentional time. Again, like you're talking about this, providing a space for them to think critically and do that discernment and have that space for spiritual formation.
And that spiritual formation piece is key, right? Because as Galen would insist, all of this takes place in the context of spiritual formation. Mission, missional training, missiology, it's all happening in the environment. Well, what does that mean? What does spiritual formation mean? It doesn't mean, you know, private quiet time with the Bible. We're talking about discipleship, which is an interpersonal process. Yeah. Well, who's tasked with that? Who's going to do that kind of formative mentoring? It has to be faculty members in the context of graduate education, but who's got time for it? Right. So, and some faculty members are naturally gifted or simply bent in terms of ministry experience toward being really good with their office hours, being really available to students and spending lots of quality time with students. And yet that is still qualitatively different than programmatically mentoring or coaching students through a praxis-oriented curriculum. Yeah. And it's just hard to conceive of how you get there. I think Galen's vision is wonderful and it's right. But it sometimes just gets relegated to an ad hoc piecemeal kind of, you know, a relational touch here, a relational touch there. And otherwise students just need to put their heads down and write their papers.
Yeah. An internship here, an internship there.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. We'll have you do a reflection paper mm-hmm. that you'll sit down and talk to me about. But it is hard. It's hard to it's hard sometimes to even just to convince professors that it's important or that it's, you know, I mean, professors are sitting there going, this is not my job description. Yeah. Right. This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah. Well, especially if you've been formed in that classical tradition,
right.
It's just not a part of your own experience. Nobody did that for you. You know, it's the same kind of conundrum I face all the time when I'm talking to church people about discipleship. It's like, how do you go into a mode of disciple making when you haven't actually been discipled in that way yourself?
Yeah.
And so you got to kind of break into the cycle somehow and be the first ones who say, nope, I'm going to figure out how to coach students in a different way. I'm going to mentor. I'm going to deepen relationships in a different way. And I'm saying all this. I mean, I'm an adjunct faculty member, so I'm certainly not in a position right now to be programmatically doing anything. But just as I look at my own work, I think, how could I possibly do this? You know, the commitment and the intention is there, the vision for a renovation of missiological education is there, but the practical dimensions of it are daunting.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And you have students that may or may not be engaged, right? Students that may or may not be there because they're like, I want a degree. I'm here for the degree so I can go out and make money and pay off my debt, mm-hmm. My school debt. So, you know, one of the things that I love about Dr. Van Rienen's, and this is very much related to what we're talking about, is, you know, when he's talking about his missional helix, this method, you could call it a method for discernment. He is engaging, he, you know, it's let's engage biblical themes. Let's engage cultural analysis. Let's engage historical perspectives, and let's talk about strategy development and implementation. Let's do all of that, and let's do it all within this, you know, very relational and emphasis, and in a spiritual formation focus in the midst of all of that. And there's much to appreciate there within what he describes as this missional helix. That is, I mean, it profoundly influences how he conceives of graduate education.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can see the connections there. Spiritual formation, let's not separate that from our biblical study. Let's not separate it from our cultural analysis, right? Let's not pull that apart from, let's not pull our historical study away from, you know, my relationship with you right now in this moment. And the word that you had brought up earlier, Greg, was
holistic.
Holistic. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, holistic. That's something that Van Rienen has very much contributed.
I think so. I think that's, you know, my favorite thing about the missional helix is this holistic commitment, right? And then there are others that hold together various dimensions of missiological training or mission practice in other models. But by offering this sort of clear, concise concept of a helix, a sort of spiraling movement that keeps these pieces always integrated one with the other, is very helpful. And I don't often find people who would deny the need to keep these things together, but I also don't often find writers who conceptualize that relationship as sort of centrally, mm-hmm. as fundamentally as yeah. Galen does. It's the holding of these things together is his main thesis. And that's a very useful position to take when in fact we so easily relegate and silo and get distracted and focus in one area. And all of those dynamics are so common that I find it incredibly useful but wise, yes. to say, if I'm going to build a paradigm, it's going to be a paradigm for holistically moving forward.
And it's, I mean, in some ways, part of what he's saying is, look, formation and discernment go hand in hand. In our work of discernment, we are formed, right? We are being formed spiritually. And in our work of formation, we're growing in our capacity to discern, and those things can't be pulled apart. And in some ways, I mean, I love the way that it pushes against and it counters some of our, you know, mind-body dualism, our, you know, individualism, you know, that we struggle with in our culture, some of our Gnosticism when we're approaching our theological education. And again, there's much to appreciate here in what Van Rienen is offering through what he refers to as his missional helix as a method for discernment.
Absolutely. And I think what you said as a summary statement at the end of the interview is another way of capturing the essence of this. His theory is inseparable from his practice. And the integration of those two things is no mean feat. It just is praiseworthy to see someone who really does both of those things, theoretical work and practical work. And even in the scope of his own life, I can say another thing that I really appreciate. If you look at the big picture of Galen's life, it is wonderful to see he and Becky, because she's with him in this journey all along, in long-term cross-cultural mission work, and then in long-term higher education, and then back again to long-term church planting, now in a challenging new context that is this sort of postmodern, post-Christian, post-whatever America, mm-hmm. where churches are in decline. And his response to that is, well, there's a decreasing number of students coming into missiology, a decreasing number of courses, and an increasing need to address the practical reality. By what? By contextualizing in the American context new expressions of church and faith and life. And so he leads in this third act, he leads the development, an entrepreneurial way,
yes,
of an organization that equips and facilitates and trains for that purpose. And when you take that all together, you just see this constant ebb and flow of theory and practice, of commitment and reflection and action and critical analysis. It's a wonderful thing.
Greg, one of the things that I'm interested in is for listeners maybe who haven't had a chance to sit down and meet Galen and sit down with Van Rienen and experience him face to face. You've had interactions with him over the years, and I'm interested in hearing a little bit about your, what's that been like for you and your interactions with Galen.
Yeah, and I wish that we had some others that have known him more intimately and for longer than I have. But so my experience is relatively limited. What I can say is every interaction that I've had with Galen has been just immediately a spiritual encounter, where he's always functioning authentically out of this mode of a prayerful spiritual dialogue about what's God up to in your life and how are you moving forward in mission, and tell me about what's happening. And it's the kind of thing where in others, I would normally experience it as a little bit awkward or off-putting.
Right. Yeah.
But with Galen, it's not, because it's so genuine.
It's just who he is.
And it's just who he is. Mm-hmm. And he just immediately goes into this kind of pastoral mentoring mode, even if he's just meeting you.
I love it.
Looking how to bless you and how to serve you out of his experience and ask good questions.
Yeah,
that's been my experience of Galen, limited though it is.
So the very first time I heard your name, Greg, was in the mouth of Galen, and he was talking to me. We were at EMS, and I shook his hand, and you're Martin, you're at Fuller, and do you know Greg? Do you know Greg McKenzie? Because he is brilliant, and I don't think I had actually met you yet, but. But anyway, I just heard about this amazingly brilliant young man who's doing great writing, and I was like, man, I got to meet this guy, whoever this is. Galen thinks that he's like fantastic, so he must be like super cool. But anyway, I'm really glad that I finally did get to meet you, Greg. And you are as awesome as Galen thinks you are.
You know, we're going to cut this entire piece of conversation.
Leave it in. This is so good. Anyway, I was like, I'm shaking his hand, and it had been years since I had seen him last. So I was like, man, he just wants to talk about Greg this whole time, and I just want to talk about churches and Jesus.
And there we have it.
No, but I love that. I mean, I love his relational approach to everything that he does, and I think that's evident in the way that he's interacted with you and with me and with so many others. Mm-hmm. It is, his scholarship is very much a part of who he is. It is, it emerges from, it's bubbling up from his practice, his theology and his practice. They are intimately related, and you see that as soon as you meet him. And we continue to need more and more scholars like that. And we appreciate those of you who listen in to Missiology Podcast and engage us at missiology.com, because that's part of what we're trying to do, is create that connection between, look, what's happening on the ground, what you're doing in your daily life, and let's think deeply about this, right? Let's be, as he refers to himself, I think, he talks about, does he say paradigm?
A paradigm former.
Paradigm former, right? So let's be paradigm formers in the midst of very relational, loving neighbor, loving God, those kinds of relationships. I appreciate
that. Yeah, I think that's right. For me, what we're doing here with the podcast and the rest of the website is in the tradition of Galen.
Yes.
It is seeking for this robust theory practice marriage. Mm-hmm. And doing that by engaging the conversation broadly, openly, generously. Galen, I think Galen taught many of us to have that big tent conversation and engage with the best that everyone brings.
And then speaking of the big tent conversation, when we're saying that, we're talking about the global South included, right? And so that's one of the things that, Greg, I mean, you've talked about how people continue to reach out to you asking about Galen, folks from Africa, for folks from the global South that are saying, look, we want to read his stuff. he continues to, you know, he's written things that matter to us. And we want to know what's he writing now. Right. So, I mean, I love that. I think that that's part of the big tent approach for Galen. And it's part of the big tent approach that we desire and pray for here at Missiology Podcast and Missiology.com. It's, we want to be a space where people are coming together, sharing ideas, and it's people from all over the world serving God in many, many different ways, both in the academic world and on the ground in the local church. And so, Galen, thank you for really, I mean, helping develop this culture. Thank you for the way that you have been sensitive to God's spirit and God's movement in your life and the ways that we hope to carry on that legacy. I mean, that's, again, thank you for modeling that for us. In many ways, you continue to mentor us at missiology.com.
Absolutely. Here's to Galen.
Here's to Galen. Hear, hear.
Well, let us encourage you one last time. Consider letting our listeners know about your ministry, your work, your book, whatever it is that we could advertise. Again, contact us at podcast@missiology.com for details. And otherwise, love to hear from you. Comments are welcome. Emails are welcome. And most of all, support at Patreon is welcome.
Absolutely. Thank you, listeners. We love you guys.
All right, Martin. We'll catch you on the next one.
See you, Greg.
Peace.